The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Scarecrow stands about 12 feet tall. A lone, misshapen sentinel in the midst of a dark field, beneath the blood of a clotted red sky. His shadow is long across the crops, comprised knots of two simple poles and a sack of straw. This monstrosity is a veritable wicker man of crisscrossed slants and beams of wood. He leans to one side and weaves ever so slightly in the breeze of the dying day. Luminescent bulbs or LEDs or flashlights or somethings have been placed deep in the back indents of his eyes, and from each glows a pinprick of fiery orange. His wooden smile leers at me from afar, and I withdraw my hand from the rotten fence that borders his field with a shiver of discomfort. A crow to my right jumps forward along the fence and makes a peck for the shiny silver ring on my hand. I shoo him away. "Leave it," I warn him, as his brothers and sisters flap and fly all around. They cover the fence and circle in wide arches above the Scarecrow's field, but none dare descend, and none hop down to its earthly ground. The twisted Scarecrow, to his credit, is doing a good job of keeping the crows away, and I don't blame them. The Scarecrow's field gives off a disturbingly nightmarish aura, one of a watery dream that is about to go quickly south. You don't know how exactly, but you can feel that something terrible is coming. Paradoxically, however, the feeling is an addicting one. It's fascinating and otherworldly, and it's what keeps me coming back here again and again, despite it being over an hour out of my regular routine. The crow makes another jump for my ring. Scar, I've nicknamed him, on account of the grayish scratch that crosses one of his beady black eyes. "Get away," I murmur, shaking his hand at the bird. He only hops up onto a nearby post and cocks his head, looking me up and down. The Scarecrow stands tall and alone, far out in the middle of the field behind him. It occurs to me that I've never taken a picture of this hideous thing. If it were suddenly taken down one day, then I'd have no proof it even ever existed. I reached into my pocket for my phone and draw it out, angling it up toward the field.
"I'd rather you didn't take that picture, pray,"
murmurs a voice to my left. I gasp in alarm and swivel to the voice's source. There stands an elderly man, face deeply lined and shadowed beneath a wide-brimmed hat. He leans casually enough against the fence, yet gives off to me the impression of a coiled spring, one set to release at any second.
"Folks will want to see it, you understand, if they know it's here."
He adjusts his stance a little.
"They'll come in their cars and their crowds and crush the crop, and the crops are well needed."
I just stare at him in awkward silence. "Why have such a spectacle of a scarecrow at all, then, if you don't want people to see it?" I think, but cannot form the words. Seemingly reading my thoughts, or perhaps just anticipating the next question, the old man gestures to the Scarecrow.
"He's a beast for sure. But like the crops, he's well needed. Nothing less will keep away the crows. The crows love the crops, and the crops must grow, lad.
As if in response, a nearby crow calls out with a quick, low shriek. The sound makes me grimace, and I look to its source, to my right. It's Scar, and he glances between me and the old man, hopping from foot to foot. Then he takes flight, soaring away toward the red sky. The old man watches him go, shaking his head.
Little bastard. Where the hell did this guy even come from?
There's a field ahead and a field behind. A long, lone dirt track passes between them. The trees and bushes are withered and scarce. There's a still on the fence behind. Now maybe the guy could have just crept over it without my hearing, but even then, I swallow nervously.
Right,
I settled on simply.
Sorry.
The old man puts up his forgiving hand, but the sensation of the coiled spring does not dissipate.
I appreciate it,
he says, then tips his hat.
Enjoy your walk. Don't touch the crops.
And he takes his leave. The air cools as he passes me by, and I watch as he walks away down the rough rural track, step by step, his boots sending up little clouds of dust as he goes.
Creepy-ass old man,
I mutter once I'm sure he has left earshot. I turn to look at the scarecrow. If such a behemoth can even be referred to by so humble a name, and consider taking that picture anyway. I glance back along the path, but the old man has disappeared. My fingers itch by my pockets, but I leave the phone where it is. Frustrated by my surprising lack of courage, I chew my tongue and make to take my own leave. I reach for my bike and ease it away from the fence, and as I do so, my eyes are drawn once again to the stile. A little wooden step over the opposite fence. There's a narrow footpath on the other side that carries around the edge of a low-hilled field. The one facing the scarecrow's own. And I consider my options, though I don't consider for particularly long. There's still time before it gets totally dark. Screw it. I have time to walk. I rest the bike back up against the fence and stride right over to the stile. The second I grab hold of the post and lift myself up to cross the fence, however, I am surrounded by the sound of crows and the wavering air of beating wings.
Come on!
I shout as they shriek and caw. They dart in and out of my vision, and I do my best to wave them away. I stumble and slip from the stile and crash down into the field with a grunt, shielding my eyes as I curse the crows.
Leave me alone! Jesus!
Scar settles himself on the post and looks down at me silently, as the others all circle and swoop and swirl. I climb back up to my feet in defiance.
What the hell is this?
Creepy old men, crazy crows. I shake my head and do my best to dispel the madness.
This is a public footpath. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm free to walk.
Why are you talking to crows, Jordan?
I sigh and brush the dirt from the sides of my jeans and head out for the remainder of my evening stroll, starting with a quick pace and keen to leave the crows behind. Spooked out of taking a picture, I have been left frustrated, and maybe this walk will settle my urge to do something different. I can't help shooting glances over my shoulder along my journey. The enormous scarecrow disappears gradually from sight, yet keeps itself in my range of vision for far longer than I would have liked. The enormous scarecrow disappears gradually from sight, yet keeps itself in my range of vision for far longer than I would have liked. Those pinpricks of orange light in his eyes only growing stronger as the day darkens. I pass through great fields of curious crops. I take it for wheat at first, but the farther I walk, the darker it becomes. From pale gold in color to a pallid gray, then further to a sickened deep purple, and then eventually to black. They rustle softly in the breeze. I scratch at my neck and begin to wonder if this was such a good idea. The path runs round the edges of more fields and hills ahead, around gatherings of trees. It isn't obvious if it would be quicker to keep going or to head back. I hesitated, but decided upon continuing. It looked like it looped around a bit farther on, likely right back to the dirt track. I pass by coils of tomato plants and resist the urge to pull one of the little fruits right from the stem. They look so good, so red and juicy, but I'm no thief, and I leave them where they are. I wonder if all these fields belong to the farmer. I wonder if he was the one who built the scarecrow. I start to actually process the implications of the things he said to me for the first time. The scarecrow keeps away the crows. The crows like the crop, and the crop must grow. The sky deepens in color as the breeze blows. What the hell kind of crop would warrant such a terrifying scarecrow? Something special, surely. I slow the speed of my walk and look to my left. The path has once again been bordered by the towering strands of black wheat, wavering softly in the breeze. Curiosity overwhelms me, and I reach out a hand. I lightly brush my fingers against the stems. As I do so, the tall black wheat dissolves at once into ash. I recoil in quiet terror, watching as the ash falls to the ground in a low clump. Oh, Jesus. There's a fine black powder against my fingertips, and I hastily rub them against the side of my jeans as I look in confusion at the ash. Ash, which, as I watched, started to shake. With a stem connected to the earth, an oily black vine pushes angrily out, dispersing the ash. I stare in surprise and dismay as the vine writhes and squirms from beneath the ground, like something insect-like and alive. And with a squirt, it hauls from the earth a rapidly twitching, slithery mass, rolling around in the ash, frothing at the edges. What looks like a feather is stuck to the obscenity's back, coated in dark mucus and quivering in the breeze. The hell with this. I'm not going a step further. I turn back the way I came, walking as fast as I can, jogging, really, heart pounding as I try not to think about anything that has happened this evening. Screw it. I'm going home. The fields, it would seem, agree. It's subtle at first. I scarcely notice it. But once I do, the effect is undeniable. The fields and the ground are impossibly tilting upwards, or downwards, I suppose I should say. I have to put more and more pressure on my heels until it feels as if I am running down the side of a hill, and then a mountain. What the fuck is happening? I screamed out loud as the rush of the earth grows into the sound of a roaring river in my ears. The ground slips and melts beneath me, and I fall, crashing and spinning and landing on my side, but still I fall. Ever falling as the crops rush by, the trees, now at impossible angles, are mere blurs against the red sky. Terror courses through me as I'm sent reeling and sliding down the path-turned landslide, and in a minute I know that I will see him. Powerless to stop, I will see him. The Scarecrow. There's a cluster of trees ahead, rushing towards me. And when they pass, he will be there in the distance. Cold panic grips me tight. I want to look away, but find that I am unable. Any second now. Any second. The world rushes by. And there the monstrosity is, peering at me from over the fields. The Scarecrow, eyes ablaze and wooden grin stretched wide, staring right at me from over the hills. No, I mutter, then louder. No. But I cannot stop. The fences peel back, and the earth carries right on through. Drawing closer and closer, the Scarecrow towers up, and darkens in shadow. I can hear the creaking in the wood of his arms, carried to me by the rising wind. Down I fly. Down and down. Please, I cry out, but there is nothing I can do. I'm going to be carried right into the Scarecrow's grisly field, right into his immediate domain. The dream is going south. Terror lurks ahead. I feel it. There is only panic.
The dirt track becomes visible below, and still I fall, barreling towards the scarecrow faster and faster. The fences peel and pull away, and the crows swoop down. In a cloud of black, I am once again surrounded, deafened by caws and cries that grab at my shirt and my shoulders, dozens upon dozens of them. My vision is lost as I feel myself slowed. I stumble. There are more of them. More of the calling crows. For a second or two, I feel myself lifted from the ground. I'm sure of it. For the briefest of moments, I am carried into the air. The sensation of falling is lost. I feel their claws scratch at my skin and tear at my clothes. And with a final shriek, they disperse. I am unceremoniously dumped to the ground. The ground of the dirt track, which, I might add, has returned to a welcome flatness. The wind ceased at once. I take in a great breath of ragged air and shoot a look up at the scarecrow. He does not rush towards me. He stands tall and silent and still in his field. A field blocked by that rotten old fence. I turn around, knees bleeding into the dust. There is no great mountain, no sudden steep drops, just fields. Fields and low, unobtrusive hills. Some of the crows are mid-flight, but many of them settle themselves on the fence. Rows and rows of them, silent and watching as I catch my breath. I stagger to my feet. The eyes of the scarecrow glisten bright. Scar the crow appears from a swirling circle overhead and lands on the nearest post. He hops a little and quivers his wings expectantly. We look at each other for a moment, and he gives a brief caw. "All right," I said, "all right." With a grimace, I bring together my hands and slide off my shining silver ring. I drop it on the fence post, and the crow picks it up at once in his beak. "Enjoy," I mutter as I climb up onto my bike. And with one last look behind, I head on home and pedal the hell away. I closed my bedroom door as I slid down against it to the floor. A deep sigh escaped my mouth as I dragged my legs up to my chest. I lowered my head and closed my eyes. After a minute of self-groveling, I stood up and made my way to the bathroom where I looked into the full-body mirror, ashamed and disgusted at what looked back at me. I had just gotten back from the doctor's office. It was just a checkup, nothing too serious. That's not why I'm upset, though. It's because of the physical I had to do. It reminded me of everything I hated about my physical appearance. You see, I'm what you would call a stick, and a short one at that. I've always been small. I was born a month premature, 5 pounds and 3 ounces to be exact. The runt of the family, you could say. Ironically enough, my family is full of giants. My father is a whopping 6'11", my mother 6'5". My parents are pretty tall, so naturally, you'd expect their 4 offspring to be tall as well. You'd be mostly correct in this theory. Keyword, mostly. Let's dive in, shall we? My oldest brother, Ethan, is taller than my father, measuring at 7'1". He could have had a career in basketball, but my 26-year-old brother chose to engineer instead. Next is Mary. She is 24 and my one and only sister. Don't let her giant stature of 6'8" fool you. She is the sweetest, kindest, and most caring person you'll ever meet. And finally, my older, dorky brother, Marcus. He's been sticking out since kindergarten, literally. And he's always been the tallest in his class. Even at 23, he's standing at 6'10". So how tall am I, you ask? I must be up there with my parents and siblings, right? Wrong. I am 4'6", and I have been so since I was 12. It's insufferable having to live in a world full of giants. My parents saved up enough money to have a custom house built, expecting their kids to grow up nice and tall, just like them.
everyone except for poor little Amelia, who had to carry around her own little step stool just to be able to wash her hands. What's worse was the torment from my brothers and the occasional offensive remark from Mary growing up. While they shot up to great new heights, I stayed down in the mud. I'm shorter than the average American female, for Christ's sake. I've always envied my siblings for their bodies and loathed my own.
"Well, Miss Emerson, everything looks fine," Dr. Goodman informed me. "However, there is one concerning thing that I can't seem to figure out." My heart dropped in my chest. I had an inkling of what was about to happen. "Looking over your family history, we've noticed you're a little stunted compared to other members of your family. Your BMI was also a little low as well," he said, reading off my chart. I let out a sigh.
"Yeah, I get this a lot, actually. I can't really explain it, but I'm just really short compared to my family," I explained.
"Have you tried any dietary changes, or have you sought any hormone therapies?" he asked.
"I drank my milk and even binge ate for a while, but nothing. And I'm way too poor to afford hormone therapy. You and I will just have to live with the way I am," I answered.
After that, I promptly left. Quite embarrassed, too. So there I was, looking in the mirror, self-loathing. My phone chimed, bringing me out of my dark and self-deprecating thoughts. It was my mother, telling me dinner would be ready soon and I should start my journey over to the family estate. I don't know why I kept going over there, but there I was, every Sunday night for family dinner. I quickly throw on an oversized hoodie that belonged to one of my brothers to hide my short, plain, and uninteresting figure.
"Where's little Emmy's stepping stool?"
Ethan questioned as I entered my childhood home.
"Har har, jerk,"
I say, rolling my eyes.
And so begins the make fun of me to inflate your own small, fragile ego's feast, I thought to myself. Dinner went as it always did. Mom asked us about our weeks, and we responded with the same mundane stories as every week.
When I brought up what happened at the doctor's, my siblings broke out in laughter, and my parents gave me those disgusting, pitiful looks they always did when these things happened to me. I couldn't take it anymore. I hated being this family's butt of the joke. I hated being picked on because I was short. I was just done with everything.
"You all find it so funny I'm so short? Well, have you ever thought about what it's like to live like this? With you? You don't, and you never will. I'd kill to be as tall as you guys. I'm done. I'll be damned if I ever come back to this house."
I exploded in a rage, and doing what I did at the doctor's, I stormed out of the house and drove home with tears welling up in my eyes. I cried myself to sleep that night, like I always did when I was reminded that I was nothing but a small, insignificant ant. I woke up sometime in the middle of the night to a notification on my phone, expecting it to be a message from one of my family members apologizing. I was instead met with a Facebook Messenger message. Typical, I thought. The message was from an old high school friend of mine who I hadn't seen in years. Her name was Madison Grove.
"Sorry it's late, in your time zone at least. Anyway, I was wondering if you wanted to go out for coffee or something on Saturday. I'll be in the area, and it'd be great to catch up with you," the message read.
I typed back.
"Sure, just tell me when and where, and I'll be there."
I didn't really want to go, but I felt bad that she reached out, something most of my high school friends hadn't done, and I decided I'd go for an hour with a sappy smile slapped on my face. The week passed slowly and mundanely. I went to work, slept, and barely ate, just like I did every week. I almost forgot about the friendly reunion when Madison messaged again with a time and location. When the time came, I left and drove to the location she wanted to meet at. It was a local Starbucks about 15 minutes away from my house. I took a deep breath and walked into the shop, where a familiar, albeit older, face met my gaze. We had a short embrace, then sat down in a booth in the back corner of the establishment. "So how have you been, Amelia?" Madison questioned, initiating the conversation.
"I've been good,"
I responded. We spent the next half hour chatting while also reminiscing about our high school days. Everything was going fine until she had to ruin everything with one question.
"So, do you still hate your body?"
I contorted my face in disbelief and confusion.
That's not any of your business, Madison,"
I said sternly.
"Calm down,"
she said in response.
"I know it's a sensitive subject for you and everything, but you're the one who opened up to me about it in high school. I just want to make sure you're all right."
I cleared my throat and stated,
"Thank you for your concern, Madison, really, but I think we're done here."
I began to grab my things to run away like I normally did when Madison stopped me.
"Wait,"
she yelled, rather loudly. The people around us stared and my face went red. I sat back down, waiting for the judgmental stares to cease.
"I have something for you. I know it's not much, but I hope you'll keep it around,"
she said in a lower tone. She got up and exited the restaurant to her car to retrieve the item. As I sat there, waiting, I began to think about how much Madison had changed since then. She had really developed in the years since I last saw her. Her long, dirty blonde hair looked silky smooth and soft. Her body curved in the perfect places, and overall she looked beautiful. I wish my looks could amount to hers, but alas, my disgusting, greasy black hair would forever pale in comparison. My body is flat as a board, looking like some malnourished skeleton. My green eyes would never shine bright as her crystal blue ones. As I was wallowing in self-pity, Madison re-entered the Starbucks with her hands behind her back.
"Voila,"
she cheered, presenting me with a little teddy bear. It was brown and had a little red bow across its neck.
"Damn, and I really wanted to be mad at you too,"
I said gently, grabbing the stuffed animal. She knew my kryptonite was stuffed animals, and I just melted when I saw it. Afterwards, we exchanged our new numbers, hugged again, and went our separate ways. I got back to my house with my little teddy bear, which I had promptly dubbed Beanie, snuggled between my arms. I fell asleep on the couch, watching a show on Netflix around 10 p.m. I woke up the next morning in one of those states of bliss. It quickly dissipated when I noticed that my feet were hanging off the side of the couch and my shirt was feeling tight around my throat. I chalked it up to me shifting down the couch, as that happens sometimes. I opened my eyes and stood up.
"This isn't right,"
I thought. My center of gravity was off, and a slight soreness set in deep in my bones. I looked down, and my sight seemed distorted. The ground was farther away. I made a run to the bathroom. I made it there quicker than I anticipated. I couldn't believe my eyes. I was taller. My shirt was tighter because I was too big for it. It's a good thing I slept with just underwear on. I grabbed a tape measure and looked at my new height. My arms were longer, too. 5'9" is what it read. I had grown a whole 1 foot and 3 inches in one night. I jumped up and down in joy. After adjusting the seat of my car, I raced over to my parents' house in excitement.
"Oh my God,"
my mother exclaimed.
"Amelia, is that you?"
my dad said after.
"What happened to you?"
they asked. I hadn't thought about it in my excitement.
It's a hormone therapy I'm trying,"
I said, making an excuse on the spot. The rest of the day was full of my siblings gawking at my new figure and me finally feeling as a part of the family. Mary, my mother, and I went to the local Walmart after dinner to get myself some new clothes that would actually fit. After my shopping spree, I happily went home. My life was perfect now. I took ibuprofen as the growing pains had gotten a bit worse. I slipped into bed into my new comfortable PJs and looked at my bedside table as I started to drift. my eyes laid upon Beanie. I looked up at the stuffed bear suspiciously. I then scoffed. No way a stuffed bear could be responsible for this, I thought, as I sleepily closed my eyes and drifted off to sleep. I awoke to a loud thud. A sting of pain shot through the left side of my body as I came to. In the little light of dawn shining through my windows, all I could make out was that I had fallen off my bed. I shifted up as more pain shot through my body. I found the chain to my lamp. Oddly quickly, I might add. Light flooded the room as the full extent of what happened was illuminated. I hadn't fallen off the bed. The bed frame had snapped, making my body fall to the floor. I looked over the bed and saw shreds of clothing. I looked down, and to my horror, I was mostly nude. Not only was I mostly naked, but I was big, very big. I stood up and made my way to the bathroom, pain shooting throughout my whole body as I did. My view was very distorted as I stumbled towards the mirror. I bumped my head in the doorway. Rubbing my head, I lunged for the tape measure. 8'3". My ceiling was 10 feet in my bedroom. I turned to look in the mirror. My body portions were huge. I screamed in horror as everything was growing bigger and faster, the pain getting worse and worse. Not only was it getting taller, but fatter and wider as well. My long, fat feet made my wooden floors creak as I ran down the stairs. I feared I would fall through. I was rapidly expanding now, the pain exploding as well. I began to sob. I made my way to the longest and tallest part of my house, the living room. My living room ceiling was 15 feet, luckily, and it stretched to 25. Soon I was so tall I had to sit, but that wasn't enough. My huge feet eventually reached the other side of the wall, and I had to duck my head to avoid hitting the ceiling. I was quite literally a giant now. Eventually, I seemed to have stopped growing, but I was in so much pain and in a very uncomfortable position. I heard my phone begin to ring upstairs. And at that moment, I was glad I installed Alexa. I answered the call using the in-home assistant. It was Morgan.
Amelia, listen to me. Do you still have the bear?
I answered in an unintentionally loud voice.
Yes, I'm kind of busy right now, though, so I'll have to call you back.
Wait, I'm on my way over. The bear is cursed, and by the sound of it, you're bigger than you desired, aren't you?
I was shocked.
So, it was the bear? I said.
Yes. To tell you the truth, I'm a witch. And I cursed the bear so that you would grow a little bit taller. However, it seems I made a major hiccup.
She said.
I'm about to burst out of my house, I said angrily.
I'm almost there. I'll fix everything soon.
She said in a worried tone.
Yeah, you better.
After a few more minutes, Madison reached my house. She was barely able to get into the house because my legs were blocking the door.
Where's the bear?
She said in a hurried tone.
Upstairs on the nightstand.
I pulled out my hand and she stepped onto it. I lifted her to the stairs. After a minute or two and some weird incantations coming from my room, I began to shrink. It took no less than 2 minutes for me to shrink back to my normal size. Madison emerged from the stairs, holding some clothes for me in her hand.
Look, I can explain, she said, handing me the clothes. Get changed and I'll brew you some coffee.
I did as she said. And after a minute, there was a fresh steaming cup of joe in front of me. Madison sat across from me. She began to open her mouth to speak, but before she could, I slapped her. Although taken aback, she said,
I deserve that.
I shook my head in agreed annoyance. Apparently, when we hung out at Starbucks, she plucked one of my hairs, and then proceeded to read an enchantment spell off of a spell book she bought off the dark web. She had gotten into witchcraft and wanted to try out a new spell from her new book. After successfully altering herself, she, for some reason, thought of me. She gave me the bear, and I was supposed to grow a foot or two, but she messed up the incantation, and I became a giant. Thankfully, she reversed the spell, and I was normal again. Moral of the story, folks. Don't be friends with witches, and be glad that you have the body you do.